All right, we're going to move on at this stage and deal with the survey of IFRS around the world. Yale and Sonia have kindly hustled over. You may recall that yesterday when Michel Prado was giving his update on activities of the trustees, one of the things that he had noted was that the Constitution had been revised to separate the functions of the IFRS Foundation in terms of the dual hat that the chair of the ISB used to wear. And congratulations, you are now the executive director of the foundation. So congratulations on that. And I'll turn it over to you and Sonia. Who's going to lead off?
Yeah. Oops. So if I manage the technique. So this is to give you an update on where we are effectively with the project that has been going on since summer last year. And it dates back to the trustee strategy review. As you are all aware, the trustees ask us to seek a better understanding on the application of IFRS around the world. And the main objective there was to understand better who and to what extent are IFRSs effectively used. And so in response to that, we created an internal committee and launched a survey in August 2012 among the world standard-setting community, because we thought that would be the most appropriate forum to start off with such an undertaking. The survey closed in October 2012, but of course we are seeking further input, but we wanted to gather the material we have to date and take it forward to the next step before focusing on the second wave, as it were. What were the survey objectives? Now, there were three main survey objectives. First of all, it was about cooperating with jurisdictions and the relevant bodies to gain a better understanding about the status of IFRS application. And secondly, also, it was a sort of gap filler. We wanted to provide an independent source of information about the use of IFRS, because to date, you have to refer to firms, for instance, and their views on the extent of IFRS application. There's only very limited information available from us. So the objective was, with that also, to provide more transparency on the extent of IFRS application and to a certain extent also more comparability in the terms of the different endorsement processes that jurisdictions choose on their pathway towards full adoption. And lastly, it was also aimed at gathering intelligence that would help us to support the jurisdictions that are still on their way towards IFRS adoption to do so better. We wanted to understand where the areas of challenges, what should we maybe enhance in our approach to supporting so that these countries can move forward more quickly. And it was very important for us not to provide a one-dimensional picture, so a sort of simple tick-box approach, IFRS use yes, IFRS use no, because that wouldn't really help and it wouldn't reflect the individual regulatory and economic circumstances in each jurisdiction. So the survey content consisted of three parts: whether and how IFRS had been adopted, the endorsement mechanisms and supporting questions, and the use of the IFRS for SMEs. In general, each section comprised of very top-level questions that should allow us to get a quick understanding of the status that the jurisdictions judged in which they were in terms of adoption, and then supported by open-ended questions that allowed the responding parties to provide a more detailed picture. So the first question asked focused on the main aspects of IFRS applications. These questions were aimed at gauging a jurisdiction's general commitment to IFRSs and the extent to which they had achieved that objective already. For instance, we ask whether IFRSs are mandatory for listed companies whose securities are publicly listed, and or if they are applied voluntarily. And also, we always ask to provide further detail. The second section then was aimed to elicit a better understanding about the different endorsement processes in place. So how are IFRSs subsequently adopted in a jurisdiction? And we also wanted to understand whether a jurisdiction has entered a contractual relationship in that process with the IFRS Foundation. And that was important to us because we also wanted to understand how well the IFRS brand is protected in a particular jurisdiction. And the third section also, we wanted to understand, obviously, the spread and use of the IFRS for SMEs around the world. Well, the process was relatively straightforward. First of all, I should mention that in the meantime, Paul Pachter, who you may know, a former ISB board member, has been appointed as our consultant to lead the project. And with his knowledge and background, obviously, he's a great asset to that undertaking. We already said that we started with the world standard setters, but we used a multiple of additional contacts that we had across the organization. Importantly, we decided, in line with our aim to provide a differentiated picture, we decided to create jurisdictional profiles on the basis of responses received. So not to go for simple quantitative assessment at the end, but instead to provide for each jurisdiction a profile that would provide information on the status of IFRS application. And it was also important to us that this jurisdiction would ultimately be owned by the IFRS Foundation. And we decided so because we recognized that whatever is obviously published on our website, it's a bit in line with what Alan mentioned beforehand, is assumed to be in some way endorsed by us. So which is why we said, no, we need to have the ultimate control about what we are putting out there. However, it was very important to us that we would create these profiles in close cooperation with the responding parties, because that obviously is very important. So what about the profiles? Well, to provide transparency, all the profiles will have the same structure. There will be a sort of two level of information in line with the original survey. So top-level information to allow for quick overview and comparison, and then complemented with additional comments that provide a more detailed picture on the status of IFRS adoption. And we also agreed that there will be contact details for the relevant national standard setting or other body. We envisage that we will repeat the survey because obviously in undertaking this first survey we learned a lot what needs to be improved and what we need to make better, and we also learned about additional questions that we may want to ask the second time around. But so we think that we will repeat the survey probably on an annual basis, but we need to see once, first of all, we focus on completing that first round, and then we see when we will repeat the survey. Now, I don't want to give you a detailed overview on a quantitative assessment of what, in terms of responses, because we want to, not all jurisdiction that, or standard setting bodies that have responded, we haven't had the chance to review all the profiles yet. And so, you know, I could only give you a very preliminary assessment. But just to give you a bit of a flavor, who responded and what was sort of the gist of the survey. So to date, we had 77 responses from 64 jurisdictions. And that means in some cases we had, for instance, a regulator responding in addition to a standard setting body that makes up the differences. And overall, when we count the jurisdictions, when we include the EU jurisdictions, the survey responses to date are representative of 71 jurisdictions. We have received responses from all G20 countries with the exception of the United States. And you can see the regional split on the side there, so it's quite a balanced picture. Now, this is just to show that in terms of those that have responded already and that have said in their survey answer, pending, you know, our review process, the economic power, so to say, is already behind IFRSs. Very few jurisdictions from those that have responded to date have stated no plans or very, very vague plans for adoption of IFRS. And this is maybe, I mean, not to run through here, but you may want to have a look. That is the list of jurisdictions that have responded to date. What did the responses tell us so far? Well, the widespread adoption of IFRS is a reality. The majority really answered in the survey questions that they have adopted already IFRSs for all or some companies. And importantly, I think the responses also indicated that in most cases, IFRSs are a requirement and not an option. We are talking here about IFRSs for domestic companies, domestic listed companies. And also important is that the majority of those that responded that they have already adopted IFRSs for all or some domestic companies, they use IFRSs as issued by the ISB. And lastly also, on the use of IFRS for SMEs, about half of the respondents are already using the IFRS for SMEs, and a further 50% roundabout are considering the use of the IFRS for SMEs. That number can also be explained that a lot of the jurisdictions that responded to date are the big, economically big, developed jurisdictions, and the IFRS for SMEs obviously is targeted mainly to emerging economies. So that number will increase as we continue the survey evaluation. An important aspect was also for us, as I mentioned initially, to understand more about the various endorsement processes and mechanisms in place. I think it is important to say that the overwhelming majority of countries have some sort of endorsement processes. Only a very few countries have decided to directly implement IFRSs into their legal framework. But then there are considerable differences in the degree to which additional deliberations take place and the focus of those deliberations. So, for instance, in some jurisdictions, the focus is on the translation process and to make sure that this is in line with the English original IFRSs. In other jurisdictions, the focus is more on the governance procedures and the fulfillment of the due process. And again, others have additional technical deliberations on a standard-by-standard basis. And so I think the important facet from that is that endorsement mechanisms should not be seen as a sign of reluctant adoption, but they are simply a reflection of the different regulatory requirements in a jurisdiction. Lastly, it is also important that the majority of those that stated they have already adopted IFRSs also maintain a contractual relationship with the IFRS Foundation, and that goes back to the point of intellectual property rights. So this was also quite an important finding for us. And where there are no contractual relationships, the answers also help us to get in touch with these jurisdictions and bring these matters further. And about 50% translate, those that are already using IFRSs translate IFRSs into the local language, with the overwhelming majority doing so in cooperation with the IFRS Foundation. Also, that is quite a positive finding because translation obviously is very critical to maintaining the consistency of IFRSs. So to conclude now, what are the next steps? We aim to complete the G20 profiles in due course. They will then be published on our website. And as part of that, we also review our current use around the world section. That means to reflect our broader approach. So at the moment, this area focuses on individual MOUs that we have in place with some countries, so that will be revised to reflect the general status update. And after that, we will continue on reviewing the remaining profiles and posting that them as we go along on the website. And the results will then obviously inform Yael and the leadership of the organization how to take matters further. I think now maybe Yael wants to make some additional comments.
Yes, I have two main comments I want to make. The first is the title for the item agenda today, which is the survey on I4S Foundation, on I4S use, is a little bit misleading because the way the project evolved eventually, it started from a survey, but today we actually see it as developing our own database on I4S application and creating a reliable, informative center of information on I4S use by our own resources. And I think this is very important distinction because it started as collecting information from standard setters, but we are now creating informal, and we hope to formalize them, review processes so that the information can be validated. And in cases where we disagree sometimes, and that happens, we have clear mechanisms to check the information and to validate it and to make sure that whatever is published in our website is reliable and accurate. So I think for that matter, Polpactor is a great strategic addition to this project because he has a lot of information himself. He created such a database in the past, and by appointing him, I think we address one of the key challenges of this project. The other issue I would like to make is what are the benefits here and what are the challenges and risks of this project? I think the clear benefit is that by creating our own database on I4S use, we become much more transparent and clear about how I4S is used around the world, both in terms of our success and the times that we claim success, we can actually have a clear basis for that. But also we can focus by this on the areas where we need more work, particularly on issues of inconsistency of application, carve-outs, and areas of further work from our strategic point of view. So for us, it's a very important addition to the credibility of the statements we make. And if this becomes a successful project, the fact that other organizations and people around the world who are interested in I4S application, either academics or countries interested in moving forward, I think this profiles and this database can become a source of information and a source of learning how to do it and how to actually create a mechanism that can work for your own jurisdiction. So I think the benefit is clear. Of course, there are risks in this project, and we're already facing some of it, it's some diplomatic challenges. Not always we agree with the respondents, and we need to find a way to define how we see, understand together I4S use in a different country, whether this is substantially converged or partly converged, or whether this is a full I4S, or whether this carve-out is minor, or these issues come up when you actually try to define a situation which was vague and a little bit unclear so far. So this is an issue that I think it's a challenge, but I think if we resolve it well, it creates more transparency and it adds to the understanding of I4S use. The other clear challenge is, of course, the maintenance and the updating the information. We need to find effective and efficient mechanisms to maintain the information updated. The survey is a clear useful mechanism, but it shouldn't be the only one, and we are thinking about that. The review processes that we're trying to come up with are a way to move forward. If you have any ideas, we would be very happy to hear them now. And of course, the last challenge is inherent in what I said, is that if the information that we contain in the website is inaccurate and that would be, of course, counterpart to the whole goal of this project. It already served us As it is, we already have the profiles, and we have some discussions on countries now that we're working with. Already the profiles are very helpful to us to highlight what are the issues in countries that we've been dealing with. So I think that moving forward, I think it has great potential. So these are my comments, and if you have any more ideas for improvement, we'll be happy to hear them.
I see a couple of cards up. Bruce first.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think this is a fantastic initiative. I really do. I mean, when we had the SME meeting a couple of weeks ago, one of the main questions that came up was how many countries are actually using it and statistics around it, and we just didn't have that information at hand. So I would strongly encourage, I think this is a really, really good project by the ISB.
Alessandro, is that your card?
Just a methodological suggestion. I would prefer to separate Europe as a block from the rest of the world, because I think the adoption in Europe is not, obviously not 100% homogeneous, but it's much more homogeneous than the rest of the world. So some of the conclusions that you reach here, for example, that only a few countries have to opt for incorporation to IFRS, the legal framework, it becomes a few because you mix with Europe. If you go to Latin America, that's the majority of the countries opted to incorporation to the legal framework. So when you look at everybody together, I think you can reach to not the best conclusion. So I would treat Europe as a block, and because they tend to be much more homogeneous than the rest.
Peter Joseph.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Possibly I would request some clarifications on your table, just glancing at the countries, because I spotted in the slide where you mention Europe, number 23, that doesn't ring a bell to me. If it is 27, is the EU, if more, as it is in the table, of course. The point is you have some of the EU member states there, and then you have a title, European Economic Community. So possibly your list needs to be updated. I spotted many EU countries which are not mentioned and which follow the IFRS. Standards. So possibly you have to either update your table or put a footnote explaining what you have included.
Thank you.
Shall I just quickly clarify? So the table reflects the responses we have received to date. Not all individual EU jurisdictions have answered to us, which makes that they are not all on the list. That is probably...
Yes, I agree that it is an excellent project to have started, and that brings already a lot of information. The two questions that at least do not appear to be answered so far is what is the standard setting capability that jurisdictions have kept available to themselves in relation to IFRS? In other words, how can they modify, can they add to it? And without changing the standards themselves, how many jurisdictions do develop local guidance that they formalize? Because there is some controversy in some discussions about, indeed, the different status of adoption around the world, and it would be, if it is feasible beyond what is already a great achievement, I mean, that would be good to have.
There's a suggestion for the next round to broaden the line of inquiry. I see a number of cards going up, so I'm going to ask you to be quick in your comments, if you will, and I've lost track of who's in the queue where. So, Riaz, I'm told.
No, I think what you're already doing that. In most jurisdictions which take IFRS seriously, there is also regulator who are part of the IFIA community. So I would think that to ensure that we get greater integrity to the responses, that you should get, rather than option, get the response from both the standard setting and the regulator, because then you know how much the adoption is actually on the ground rather than somebody claiming to be an aspirational view. So it might help to get our integrity of the database better.
Begonia.
Thank you. Well, first thing is to welcome this initiative to get information about the use of IFRSs around the world. And, well, I think this, I imagine this will be in the public domain in the website. And for me, I understand this is a summary. The presentation was a summary of the current results, but it would be very important to understand really what are the main differences in the use of IFRSs. So know that IFRSs, one of the slides, it's mentioned the majority of those that responded also stated that they use IFRSs as issued. So digging into the differences and the different interpretations of IFRSs is perhaps one of the most important things to know. So, but in any case, I think that's fantastic to have this information, and if we can help you with finding information from some countries, I will be willing to do it, because I saw that Spain has not replied. So if we can do anything to help you with this, it would be good.
Anne.
Yes, I just noticed, and I compliment you on identifying the risks in this, the diplomatic challenges in terms of the responses. I think you will need, when you draft your profiles, to finally get some confirmation on those profiles. Places you might look might be in terms of some of the responses that go for accounting membership responses to IFAC. More recent World Bank ROSC reports, but don't go, the older ones might well have changed, so be careful about the dates on those. But I think you will need some confirmation of those profiles for your own brand security.
Marcus.
Thank you. I also welcome this initiative, which I find very helpful. And I have some questions. First of all, is my understanding correct that only the G20 profiles will go online, or all?
They'll go on waves. It's very difficult to prepare. So the first wave will be the G20 and hopefully the rest at some future. We decided not to wait to prepare all of them, start with G20 and move forward later.
But the profile you use will be the same for all?
Yes. So it's comparable. You can actually see the same category in each profile and compare.
Yeah, I also think that the details of the profiles matter. And this comes back to what you told earlier about the carve-outs. It's very interesting, I think, if you are partially, fully, or not compliant. And I know this is very sensible, but the criteria for being classified would be interesting. And if you're not going that route, it would even be interesting to state the diverse carve-outs you have.
Might be time to remind Council that we discussed this, I think, 2 years ago, and urged the staff to undertake this project, recognizing that the first bit of information was to just get some objective data as to whether or not jurisdictions purport to claim compliance with IFRS or not. I think we knew at the time there were going to be a whole host of follow-on questions. So this is the first step, I think a very important step, in a direction that we had strongly supported a couple of years ago. So I think what most members, I don't hear anyone disagreeing with it, and a lot of interest in actually getting beyond the first step. But my understanding was that we thought it important that at least there be public information where someone could readily go and say, on a jurisdiction-by-jurisdiction basis, what do they claim to be as their basis of reporting. Now, okay, Tommaso, I'm told you're...
Thank you. Just a very quick comment. I think it's a very useful exercise, very useful project. I wonder whether we may also have some statistics about countries that apply IFRS also for individual accounts of non-listed entities and separate financial statements. This could be a good information.
DJ.
Thank you very much. Also, a quick word to say that we are also extremely interested into this process. It's very useful information. One point of clarification. Indeed, it would be better to talk about EU, European Union, rather than European Economic Community, but that's a detail. It's important, indeed, that you have both the position of the EU and of its member states, because, as you know, regarding the use of IFRS in the EU, we only use them for the accounts of listed companies. For instance, we do not use them for SMEs, so I understand why you have asked the position of the member states in this respect. Although we have some harmonizing legislation for non-listed companies, there still is a margin of appreciation for the member states in this respect. And maybe a last point, a question I would have. What would be very useful for us to have is a description of the actual legislative process which is in place in all these countries. There must be a legislative process of a certain kind. Either you decide to make sure that at the end of the day the standards become law or not. So I think this is for us very useful information. Like we have, for instance, in the EU, we have a EU regulation, which is the mechanism through which the IFRS become part of the EU legislative acquis. Thank you.
Rioso.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the information provided by the profile will be extremely useful, particularly for those jurisdictions exploring the ways to build a momentum towards IFAS. The profile would provide various possible intermediate options. So I hope the profile would be as granular and descriptive as possible, not just saying it is compulsory for consolidated statement of the listed companies, but the scope of the market, prime market, regulated market, differ from country to country, even within Europe. And those descriptions would be very useful for country like us, or the whether the carve-out is minor or significant. Well, that is important, but if the description is provided, what is actually carved out, that would be more informative. So I hope it would be a lot of work, but I would like to encourage as informative profile as possible. Thank you.
Andrew, last point.
Thank you. Just very briefly, I'd also support the question of the carve-outs and how far does that go in a particular jurisdiction. If we look at Europe as an example, there is a carve-out, but it affects a very, very small number of companies. It would be useful to understand that. The other point was really in relation to brand protection, because there's one point about purporting to use IFRS when it isn't really. The other one that would be useful to get, and this might be something you could get if you're talking to regulators, is how IFRS is enforced in each jurisdiction. And that would be quite helpful in understanding the rigor with which the actual IFRS reports are scrutinized. Thank you.
You want to make a comment?
Wow. So we're... I think we're going to be punished for it indeed. Because, I mean, this is already quite a bit of work. And you all think it's a great idea, which is very good. And then I think you would like us to be a lot more granular than we can be at this point. So I think we have, at this point, we have to find a happy medium to get something out in the foreseeable future. Beginning with the G20, and then I think you have given us a lot of pointers as to how we could deepen this survey, but we'll have to take time for that. But I must say that a lot of the questions having been raised, or a lot of the suggestions, are very interesting. I think we would be willing to delve further into that, but that will take more time. Hmm?
That would be my concluding observation as well, Hans. I take overwhelming support for what you're doing. One of the concerns that we as a council had expressed was the lack of reliable information, readily accessible information as to who's doing what. And this may be an instance where taking it one step at a time, coming back to, I think, an important point that Yale made, is that there is a risk here because you're not accepting people's assertions at face value, which I think is absolutely the only way to do this, is to be satisfied yourself that you're prepared to stand behind this information, which requires care and caution. So I think it would be an instance where you would want a high level of confidence that the initial data that you populate this website with or whatever is indeed one that you have a high confidence in, and then gradually expand on it. And it may well be that others can then take this information and pursue some of these inquiries and take some of the burden off of your shoulders, or at least do some of the homework and bring it back. But say my sense is the council welcomes this initiative. You have several offers of help. And I, in terms of next steps, when do you expect to be able to put, I think you said the G, in response to Marcus, you said the G20 would come first?
Yeah, hopefully this Friday.
Very soon. And we would look forward to an update.
In cinemas close to you, by
it's part of your commercial uptake. Gala preview with champagne and caviar. All right. Well, thank you very much for that. Any final observations on the topic? I expect that this is something that we will revisit periodically. All right, well, let's take our break. If we could be back in 15 minutes, please. I would make it 11:15. We'll resume. Thank you.